Hello everyone, this is Joey Bushnell of webmarketinginnercircle.com. I have with me today an absolutely fantastic special guest. He is Joe Sugarman. Joe, thank you very much for being with me today.
Well, it's wonderful being with you, Joey. Thank you.
Joe, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Joe, can you just let us know how you first got into marketing and advertising?
Well, when I was in high school, I was a photographer. I was a school photographer, and I had my own column. And people would enjoy the column, but it was a very conservative school. And so I couldn't say what I really wanted to say. And then finally I decided, you know what, I'm going to come up with my own newspaper, my own magazine. And so that's what I did. But I had to go out and I had to sell advertising and I had to recruit writers. And so it was my first experience, and it was eye-opening. I mean, just to get people to advertise in your publication. But it was very successful. We made national news for doing it. And, you know, we did well. Now, we only had one issue, but it was a great issue, and everybody enjoyed it. And I went on to college to enter journalism. I was going to be a journalist. Didn't turn out that way, but that's what I was intended to be.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you've had quite a long, celebrated career since then, Joe. So what would you say would be some of the highlights of your career? I know you have a few books that you've published, you know, which I've read, which is, you know, what prompted me to get in touch with you. So what would you say are some of the best bits of your career?
Well, we were the first company to introduce the pocket calculator, the integrated circuit. We were the first company to introduce digital watches. And this is back in the early 70s. We were also the first company in the world, actually, to take credit card orders over the phone. And
wow.
As a matter of fact, it was illegal at the time. you had to have your customer's signature. But I'd get calls from customers that said, I need that calculator right away. Please, could you send it? And I said, well, I need your signature. He says, well, just sign my name. So I would. And I noticed that after several months that nobody ever took advantage of it, and it was kind of confidential. So I said, you know what? What if I put in my coupon, credit card buyers call toll-free, which I did. And what happened was we were deluged with phone calls because Bell Systems had just come out with their toll-free customer service lines, actually. And so we took advantage of it to sell product. And we did this for like 6 months, and nobody, you know, the credit card companies, instead of preventing us from doing this, just were quiet. And then we get a call from Bell Systems here in the U.S., and they said that, hey, we know what you're doing. We've been following your success. We want to publicize what you're doing and your success in the Wall Street Journal in a full-page ad. So they did, and that really helped direct marketing tremendously because catalogs proliferated during that time. Call centers opened up. I mean, it was just a whole revolution. And it was funny. It was just that one little thing, that serendipitous opportunity that I took advantage of, and it turned out to be a great moneymaker for me. And, of course, it brought the entire direct marketing industry one level higher.
Brilliant.
Yeah, so the toll-free number, I'd say that was probably among my best successes. But I also had, we were one of the first to do infomercials, one of the early home shopping people, you know, that sold products on home shopping. As a matter of fact, I've been in London so many times on QVC there in London, several years, and really enjoyed London. I enjoyed the people, and it was just a great fun. And I continue to innovate in different areas.
Fantastic. And if you don't mind me saying, Joe, you've been, you know, decades in the industry, and the type of ads that you write, they are million-dollar kind of ads, aren't they? You know, you were talking pretty big league here, aren't we?
Well, you know, I forgot probably one of the most important things, and that was that I started a company called Blue Blocker Corporation, selling a pair of sunglasses called Blue Blockers. And that product, we sold 20 million pair. And we used infomercials and print, and we used home shopping, and we used just about every conceivable marketing method, and some months selling as many as 300,000 pair. And this was all over the world, including, of course, England the common market, euro. So anyway, it was a huge success, and that was probably my biggest success. But I've had a lot of others, and probably the biggest thing about me is that I've probably failed more times than anybody can possibly imagine. And it's through failure that you learn and you grow and eventually you'll be successful. The key is never to give up.
Sure. Thank you for that. Yeah, brilliant. Okay. All right, Joe. So the questions that I wanted to ask you today, they are from, well, they're inspired by the books that you've written. And I just wanted to go through some of my favorite bits. And if you could just sort of let us know a little bit about them, and maybe at the end we'll discuss some of your books as well, if that's okay. So my first question for you would be, in your book Triggers, you talk about product nature. And I'm just wondering if you could just let us know what product nature is and why it's so important to understand it well before creating your advert.
Well, let's take, for example, product nature. Let's say I was selling a burglar alarm. And what I've learned about selling burglar alarms, but we were one of the top companies selling burglar alarms through the mail. And what I learned was that people would tear out the ad and not respond. They would just keep the ad. And then when their neighbor got robbed or if there was some bad experience in the neighborhood, then they'd take out that old ad and they'd read it and then they'd give us a call. And so that, the nature of that product was that it was something that when people felt a real need, when it was something where circumstances created the need, they would then respond. Well, you have to know the nature of your prospect. Another good example is I was sitting in my bedroom upstairs in my home. All of a sudden, I see an ambulance pulling next door to my neighbor's house, and out goes my neighbor who had a heart attack and died. Now, prior to that, I had this insurance agent constantly calling me, telling me I should have insurance, and he'd come to my house and buy a few pocket calculators. So he became a friend, and then when my neighbor died next door, and he was a young kind of guy, I was really shocked. I called up my insurance guy, the guy that had been badgering me, and I said, "Hey, you know that insurance you were talking about? I think it might be a good idea." So that's product nature.
Okay, and you're so talking about prospect nature as well, Joe. Is that sort of linked with product nature?
Yeah, you've got to understand your customer. You've got to learn everything you could possibly find out about what is that customer about. And in my books, I talk about some beautiful examples of that, where if you discover the nature of your prospect, and again, that comes through learning about that, you really have a powerful, what we call a psychological trigger.
Absolutely. Okay. There's something that you talk about in your books as well, which is where you basically say that you can, when someone is reading a written ad, that you control the buying environment, similar to like when someone is in a shop, that they're in a buying environment. But often, when I first read this, I thought, well, how can you possibly control it where someone's reading your ad? How do you control the buying environment? So I was just wondering, how do you do that, Joe, in your adverts? How do you control the buying environment?
Well, I think a real good example that I learned this from was there was this guy that was the best salesperson in this this store that sold television sets and washing machines and everything like that. And he was the most successful salesperson they'd ever had, and he was retiring, and he was going to give his speech, and he decided he would tell everybody what he did. And what he did was he would look at the people that would walk in the store. He would just be standing on the sidelines. And then when he saw somebody turning the knobs of a television, he knew that that person was a good prospect. So I hope that answers your question, but I've got a lot of examples of the nature of prospects and how you could determine how to deal with them and how to interact.
Sure. So the controlling the buying environment, Joe, is that sort of along the same lines?
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to sell an expensive product, you want your ad to reflect the quality of that product. You want to create a buying environment where people will feel comfortable. A good example is I went to a art gallery, and in the art gallery, the paintings were on the floor, and it was kind of schlocky looking. I didn't expect to pay much for any painting that I'd buy there, but I went to another gallery, and the gallery had carpeting, and they had pictures where they were hung on the wall, and there was real comfortable chairs where you can sit and discuss things. And so I expected to pay more for that as well. So the buying environment often is reflected in different ways, and you can reflect that also in copy.
Yeah. And what do you mean by the slippery slide when it comes to copywriting? What's the slippery slide?
Well, when people see your advertisement, the first thing that attracts them is the headline, and maybe the subheadline, and maybe the captions for the pictures, and maybe the paragraph headings, and in other words, the whole idea of the slippery slide is to get you to read one of the elements, and that element is so persuasive or so curiosity building that you want to read the second thing, like the subheading. And that would be so curiosity building that you'd want to read the first sentence. And when you read the first sentence, you might be so curious, well, what is it? And then you read the second sentence and the third sentence. So you create like a slippery slide. You create something where you can't get off. You keep on reading because you're so compelled through curiosity and through a bunch of other techniques that you read the whole ad. And they say that if you can get the person to read the first two paragraphs and you're doing a good job of copywriting, that person will read the entire ad. And I've proven that. I've written an entire ad and where the payoff, of course, was at the very, very end. And sometimes these ads are like they're extremely wordy. So anyway.
Sure. And I guess that means that there's no room for kind of boring or redundant paragraphs. Every single paragraph has to really earn its place in that case.
That's correct.
Okay. In your books, you also talk about how emotion is all important in copywriting. There's three emotions that you specifically mention as well that I'd like to ask you about, Joe. So the first one is greed. How does greed come into play in marketing?
Well, you know, it's making a person feel a little guilty. You ever get these mailings and they have address labels in there and they say, respond and please send us $20. And you feel kind of guilty because they sent you this gift. Sometimes they'll send you a dollar bill and I'll ask you to fill out a survey and you feel kind of guilty because they sent you a dollar bill, but you spend about a half hour filling out a survey and your time is pretty valuable. So that's kind of guilt. Guilt is used in a lot of different ways. And I talk about several different ways that you can use guilt in causing somebody to take an action and purchase your product. Simply by feeling, I really feel guilty unless I buy this product or I buy this service. It works for products and services.
Okay. And how about hope? You mentioned hope as well. How does that help us with our ads?
Well, some products, like for example, vitamins. You buy it on the hope. You buy it on the hope that the vitamins that you're buying are going to help you and are going to make you feel better and going to make you healthier and prevent disease or whatever. And it's not something, I mean, it's hope. You're selling hope. You're selling opportunity. You're selling, and in my books, I explain how to use the power of hope to sell things that typically would be very difficult to sell.
Sure. Okay. So we've covered guilt and hope, and then last of all, greed. Why should we remember greed when we're writing an advert?
Well, because people respond to strong price points, low prices. If you take, we had, for example, a product we started selling for $69.95, and the manufacturer got really or excuse me, $59.95, and the manufacturer got really upset because he said everybody is selling it for $69.95, and you're undercutting everybody. So what we did is we ran an ad, and we said in the ad that, look, at we've got the wrong price point, but for the next 2 weeks we'll let you purchase it at this lower price point. And it turned out that that little ad that we placed worked so much better than the original ad. The bottom line is the people are attracted to bargains. Even if you're a wealthy individual, you will be attracted to value, and that's basically what greed relates to.
Sure. Yeah, I totally get what you mean. Yeah, if you can get it for less than what you'd expect to pay, then of course you'd much rather do that than pay more than you had to, of course. Okay, so my next question, Joe, was you talk a lot about in your books about satisfaction conviction, and that's not a term that I've really heard anywhere else. So what does that mean?
Well, you've heard of the 30-day trial period, the 60-day trial period, and basically it says that if you're not happy, return the product within 30 or 60 days and we'll give you your money back. Well, a satisfaction conviction goes way beyond that. A good example is when we were selling blue blockers on television. We said, when you get your blue blockers, if you're not happy, even if you've waited 2-3 years, you can return it and get all your money back. Well, that was a satisfaction conviction. Basically, it was saying that you've got to be satisfied or you're going to get your money back. And another example of satisfaction conviction is we were selling a digital watch. And at the time, digital watches were kind of, sometimes there were problems with them. And so we addressed that head on. We said, hey, look, if you have a problem with your digital watch, call us up. We'll send you a loaner watch. And we'll send you a box to put your defective one and send it back to us. Well, that was a good satisfaction conviction because we were saying that basically if you have any problems at all, we want you to be very satisfied and we'll replace that and it won't cost you a penny. And as a matter of fact, we'll send you a loaner watch in the process. So, and that promotion did exceptionally well.
Sure. It's kind of going really that extra mile to make sure that the customer is going to be satisfied. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. You know, all these things could be grouped into three. We have 31 psychological triggers, and all of them could be actually grouped into three different categories. The first category is to create an environment, a buying environment. The second one is to create trust in your prospect. In other words, where the prospect trusts you. And the third is something that will trigger a sale. Satisfaction conviction is a very powerful tool to trigger a sale. We have had examples where we've had 1,000-word ads, 2,000-word ads, and we change just one word at the end of an ad, changing the satisfaction conviction slightly, and the response will double. And I give a lot of examples of that, where you can double response simply by a strong satisfaction conviction.
Okay. You also talk in your books about linking, and again, that's not really a term that I had heard up until I read your book. So what is that, and why does it help us?
Well, it's very difficult to sell a miracle product, because you have nothing to compare it to. It's usually a major breakthrough or whatever. What linking does, it links what you already know with the slight or advanced improvement that your product has. So, for example, back when calculators, you were able to store, well, I go back to in the early days of the calculator when Canon came out with a calculator that you could program the memory and it will hold all your telephone numbers. Now, of course, today that seems almost too simple, right? But back then, that was a major breakthrough. But how do you sell that? Well, what we did was we related it to a pocket. We call it the pocket yellow pages. And we linked it to something that people understood. Yellow pages, a directory, and we explained, of course, how that worked. So that's what I meant by linking. You link it to something that people already understand and can take the next step in terms of being convinced that your product is really a special product.
Brilliant. Okay. You also talk about exclusivity, and why is that a powerful factor? What is it about exclusivity that really attracts people to a certain product?
Well, I use an example where I had the snowmobiles at my. I had an estate up in northern Wisconsin, very snow country, and I had several snowmobiles because I would be giving seminars up there, and I'd have my seminar participants using the snowmobiles. And then I went to the snowmobile dealer just to see what was new, and he showed me the new model that went 100 miles an hour on the lake. And I said, well, who would care about that? I mean, that's kind of ridiculous. He says, oh, no. He says, you don't understand. This is real popular. In fact, we only have two of them, and that's all we're going to get for the whole year. And I said, gee whiz, let me get one then. In other words, because it was exclusive, it attracted me because I wanted something that was really different. And when do you use that? You use that when you're selling art or collectibles or things that are very exclusive and very few people will have. And it's kind of satisfying your ego, really, because you're getting something that very few people have. And if you can convince people, and I show several ways of doing that, if you can convince people of its exclusivity and its rarity, you can trigger a sale.
Okay. You also talk about mental engagement, which is kind of leading the prospect to reach the conclusions that you want them to, but you make them feel as if they reach that conclusion on their own. And that sounds quite difficult to me. How would you go around doing something like that, Joe?
Well, when we have something to sell, let's say, I use one example in the book of talking about a digital watch that was produced by Seiko that was so much less expensive than another particular model that was very popular. And I said, jewelry stores love this because they sell the product for $300, but and it only cost them $150. Now, what I don't say is those jewelry stores are making a fortune, and it's the markup that's causing that. But people came to that basically that conclusion. Mm-hmm. And so it's letting the customer reach a certain conclusion without you having to be very obvious about that conclusion. And that is a very effective thing. People, believe it or not, when they exercise their brain, they've done brain scans where the brain just becomes alive, as opposed to hand feeding and giving people what the information that they need. By causing them to think, activates the mental mechanism, and people tend to respond to that.
And of course, it's much more powerful if someone believes that they've convinced themselves than some. You know, no one likes to feel that someone else convince them or change their mind, but if they feel that that's their own conviction, then of course it's much easier to make a sale, surely.
Joey, that's exactly right. Absolutely.
And my final question for you, Joe, was about editing, because, you know, I'd imagine that when you're writing an advert, when you've done a first draft, there's lots that has to be chucked out the window. So any tips for us when we've written something, how do we edit it, refine it, make it, bring it to that final version?
Well, in my opinion, the most powerful thing you could learn is how to edit, because everybody could write. People tend to either write too much or too little, but it's in the editing process that you really refine the ad. And every word has an emotion, and every emotion, you sell on emotion and you justify with logic is basically what it is. So the things I look for in my ads, rhythm. Where you start out with a short sentence, then you have a longer sentence, then a shorter, then two shorters, then a longer. And in other words, you vary the ads so that they're different lengths. And that creates a certain rhythm. And that's really important. The other thing is always look, for example, for the word that. And if you read it, if you say something like, and it's very clear that, you can take out it's very clear, or it has been really known that. You can take out everything before the word that. So if you see a word that, determine if the words that precede that are really that necessary, if you can really eliminate those. You want simplicity in your sentences. You don't want any complicated words. There are always easier ways to express yourself without having to be too complicated. And so, the bottom line is in my book, I talk extensively about the editing process. I go through several examples of things that you could do to tighten up your copy and make it very effective. And by the way, if I haven't mentioned this already, your ability to write copy, your ability to write advertising that sells people, that sells a prospect, that causes a person to buy, is an extremely powerful tool that could build a business literally overnight. And I have several examples in my lifetime of building businesses overnight that didn't exist before I sat down to write the copy. And it's again, it relates to editing, because editing is the key. If you want to be a great copywriter, you want to learn editing. And that's of course, one of the things that I teach in my books.
Joe, I just want to thank you so much for doing this interview with me. It's been really fun to do this. And the information that you have given us today is just absolutely brilliant. Can you just tell us a little bit about your books? Because I'm sure the listeners want to get more, because like you mentioned, there's 31 psychological triggers, and we've only covered, you know, maybe a handful of those today, and I'm sure they want to know all of them. So please tell us a little bit about your books.
Well, it's being sold on Amazon.com. I have a book called The Adweek Copywriting Handbook. And the subheading on it is The Ultimate Guide to Writing Powerful Advertising and Marketing Copy from One of America's Top Copywriters. And in it, I have all the psychological triggers. I have all the various axioms and techniques and things that people don't realize. And this goes beyond the original book, Triggers, which is now out of print. And this one, this particular book has all the psychological triggers and all of the axioms and the techniques and also a lot of examples of ads and how you can create that slippery slide and how you could link very easily and all those very helpful things. It's called, the Adweek Copywriting Handbook, and you can get it through Amazon.com. It's sold throughout the world. And my biggest thrill is getting letters from people who have read that book and said that they started a business as a result, and they owe their success to have. I'll give you a beautiful example of this. My friends over at Google, they ran a promotion, and they got a response, and then this one guy read my book, and he rewrote the ad, and they ran it again, and they got triple what they normally would have gotten. And as a consequence, I gave a lecture there. I spent 3 days at a seminar teaching them how to write really good, great copy. So these techniques work, and they work very effectively. And the Adweek Copywriting Handbook is, I would say, the book to get. I've written several other books. One is called Advertising Secrets of the Written Word. It's pretty close to the Adweek Copywriting Handbook, although the Adweek Copywriting Handbook is a little bit more recent. I've written a book called Marketing Secrets of a Mail Order Maverick. That's print advertising and how I use that to build businesses and sell product. And then the final one is TV marketing, or TV marketing secrets or something like that. So it's all about my experiences on television, both in the UK and infomercials and all over the place. And so that's about it. I've written several books. A couple of them are out of print, and I'm considering reprinting them because we still get demand for them.
Yeah.
And I just want to thank you, Joey, for giving me the opportunity to share some of the ideas with your audience. And any way I could help, please feel free to provide them with my information. I'd be happy to respond.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you, Joe. That's absolutely wonderful. And wherever the listeners are listening to this, there will be links underneath to Joe's books on Amazon. Joe, do you have a website or anything like that where people can kind of, you know, not necessarily your books, but just find out more about you? And is there anywhere they can go for that?
I think it's, I'm so far behind in this area, but I think it's Joe Sugarman at Joe. Well, it's joesugarman.com.
Okay.
Yeah, that's about it. But if you Google me on the internet, you'll find out a lot of information. You know, it's one thing, you can't keep things private on the internet.
Yeah.
But you'll find a lot of good information about me on the internet.
Sure. Okay. Joe, I just really want to thank you for the time that you've given me today and for the brilliant information. It's going to help the listeners. And please, guys, go out and buy the books as well, because you know, they're really in depth and they're really going to help you out. So, Joe, thank you once again.
Well, thank you, Joey. I appreciate the opportunity.